Welcome to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden, your host and guide through this adventure in the outdoors. Hope you're having a good day or evening or somewhere in between. If you're driving, keep both eyes on the road and both ears on the podcast. I'd appreciate it. Great podcast in store for you. A little bit of everything. We're talking bird dogs and bird hunting and all the things that matter to people who love those. This week, a guest that I think will help us enjoy our hunt long after we come back from wherever we are, Jeremiah Doughty. From Field to Plate is the name of his website and his business. This guy knows hunting, he knows birds, he knows cooking, he knows game care. We're going to pick his brain and enjoy ourselves from Field to Feast, coming up very soon in the Cabela's podcast studio. Of course, a public access tip that I've learned this season in particular quite a bit. Some hunting strategy and dog handling advice. It's all about the stuff that you love in a concise and compact way. If you are going to Pheasant Fest, I hope you'll come by and say hello. Got a booth. I'll be sharing a big space with my friends at Pointer Shotguns and some new stuff to share with you there, including the new website I've been talking about lately, findbirdhuntingspots.com. Yeah, it's about time somebody did something like that. But lots of other things to talk about, from dog training to where to hunt to new shotguns from Pointer. So come on by and visit us in Minneapolis. We're on the way to the bird dog stage. You can't miss us. We got a big end aisle booth. So watch for my sign, their sign, our signs, and stop by and maybe you get a chance to win one of those Pointer shotguns. All right, the Upland Nation podcast is brought to you in part by Sage and Breaker Mercantile Gun Care and Cleaning Products, crafted at the highest caliber. You know, I've been getting a lot of great feedback. I appreciate it. I've been writing an article for them every month in their website. So if you enjoy all the stuff that comes from guns and gun care, and if you're one of those kind of guys, I'm not, but I am learning real fast that guns are a great muse for my writing. So check them out, if for nothing else, to read some more of my stuff if you like it. And then also from Dogtra. Dogtra.com is where you learn all about the T&B dual collar. It's my training collar of choice. Two sets of buttons, no toggling, no smashing the screen with your gloved hand so that nothing works. It's all at Dogtra.com, including some discounts and some lower prices just for listening to this Upland Nation podcast. Okay, so on the line with me, somebody I've been looking forward to talking to for a while, Jeremiah Doughty from Field to Plate. That's where you find all the information on him. It doesn't matter which social media platform you like, but Instagram works pretty well for him because then you can drool all over your phone from Field to Plate. Wild game chef, Labrador owner, welcome to the Upland Nation podcast, Jeremiah.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So, how does a guy get into that world, and where do I sign up?
Yeah, I got into that world on accident, actually, which is, I think, the best way to get into something, because when you are forcing yourself to get into something or you want to be famous in something, then it usually doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But when you're not wanting to and all of a sudden it happens, it's even cooler. But no, I've always been a bird hunter my entire life since I'm at – my first memory of hunting is sitting in the dove fields with my dad and uncles and friends and family and chasing doves around before I was even too small to grab a shotgun. And getting into the world of culinary was something I loved. I worked in restaurants for years and years and years and years. And then about 10 years ago, I found out I'm allergic to beef. So I have an intolerance to bovine fat, as well as some domesticated pigs, which kind of threw a whole wrench into my world, because being a good Irish kid born and raised on meat and potatoes, someone telling you that someone saying you can't eat beef was just a devastating blow to what I loved culinary wise. And so for about a year, I ate nothing but chickens and, you know, turkeys and any birds that I shot, ducks, quail, pheasant, you name it. And then, I went out and I was actually getting ready for fall turkey season at the archery range and talking to some old timer out there. And he was telling me about antelope in Wyoming. And I looked at him and was like, man, I'm a Southern California kid living on the beach. There's no way I could afford to hunt a different state for big game. And I don't even know how to hunt big game. I don't even own a rifle. I don't own anything like that. But he told me that the tags were $38. And so I put my bow back in the case, drove home and bought an over-the-counter tag and drove to Wyoming in a Honda Civic with a buddy of mine who had not hunted big game either. Bought a cheap rifle, bought a $30 scope at Walmart, and taught myself how to shoot a big game animal.
Wow.
And it's just from that moment 9 years ago has developed into quitting my career, starting a whole new one, and falling in love with big game hunting and small game hunting. And not only that, but how to prepare it and get people excited about eating wild game that's not just wrapped in bacon or mixed into a chili, you know?
You know, which are both, by the way, really, phenomenal, really good. And yeah. I'm too hungry to go deeper into the details on that right at the moment. But, you know, so what do you do? I mean, what do you do all day and how do you do it for, you know, to make a living at it?
I like to tell everyone I get to play with food all day long.
Yeah.
Which is, I went and spoke at my daughter's kindergarten class last week and all the kids are like, well, what does a chef do? And I was like, they just get to play with food. And they're like, we want to be a chef. I was like, yeah, it's a little harder than that. But no, what I do all day is primarily how I'm making a living now is selling delicious recipes to some amazing companies, magazines, TV shows, TV networks.
Wow.
My life has become all about creating beautiful imagery through photos. Food photography has become a passion of mine in the past 3 years since I quit my job. I look at what I put out there, you know, 6 years ago when I started having this passion for it. And I laughed that people even started following me just because of, you know, took a picture of just the crappiest looking plate of food. But again, it's food tells a story. And I think I had a story to tell about my food and that's what people bought into. And now I've just been able to understand how to tell the story even better through beautiful ingredients and continue to tell that story of hunting and the excitement and the passion behind hunting and fishing and how meat is meat, no matter how you look at it. If you go to the store and get a package of ground beef, there's no story behind that other than you went to the grocery store. But for me, if I go down to my freezer and get a package of ground elk, there's a story behind that package of ground elk.
And I am glad you brought that up. And that is something that I've espoused for years. In fact, I even trademarked the term field to feast because we do on the show once in a while a little segment on that. And the whole idea of, you know, closing the circle with that story and the dining being the, you know, kind of the last chapter in the story has always been important to me. And it does add not only add value to the personal experience, but to the people you're sharing it with who may not be that way. Do you see yourself as sort of an evangelist for wild game and for hunting?
Oh, 100%. We had I had to get some plumbing done on my house yesterday. And so the two plumbers come, they're down there and they open up my garage and I don't have any beautiful full shoulder mounts or anything like that. But when I started this, one of my things was every animal I kill, not only am I going to eat it, but I want to euro mount the skull as part of the story. And so my garage, I've got a wall that's just covered in every imaginable skull, from turkey skulls to pheasant skulls to giant deer and access and you know, black bear and wild boar. And these guys just walked in my garage. They're like, did you kill all those animals? And I was like, yeah. And I go, and I can tell you about each and every one of those stories. And we were talking, and then I open up my fridge downstairs and I pull out some homemade antelope summer sausage and start feeding these guys as they're working on my house. Next thing I know, the young kid who's in his 20s is like, is there any way that I can talk to you more about getting into what you're doing and getting meat for my family? And I was like, I don't even know who this kid is, but all because I sat there and gave him some summer sausage and he said it was the best meat he's ever eaten. Now, just in that hour interaction, learn how to hunt.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm just stoked about that because it is a philosophy I believed in for a long time. You can turn a lot of people into hunters or just neutralize the anti-hunting in people by feeding them the right way. Good on you, and let's hope we make a new hunter out of that guy who will then come back and probably fix your toilet when it overflows next time.
That's exactly what I want to hear, yeah.
Yeah, does anybody out there know a good plumber in Bend, Oregon? Please send him my way. If you had to narrow it down, Jeremiah Doughty, to a one game animal that you love to cook and serve the most, what would it be?
Oh, gosh, that's like me picking a favorite child. Mm-hmm. I have one, just don't tell the other one. But I think if it comes down to the whole experience of the hunt, the community around the hunt, and then the cook, it would have to be waterfowl.
Mm-hmm.
I know people are like, what? You're not going to go shoot an elk? Elks are absolutely amazing to cook, and you get so much meat off of it. But I think when it comes down to the hunt, sitting in a duck blind with your dog sitting next to you and your buddies laughing hysterically, and all of a sudden you hear that honker or that mallard sound off, and everyone goes silent and grabs their gun. It just, that moment for me is probably the best hunting in the world. And then bringing that home and creating dishes that are dishes of duck that people haven't seen before. Because
mm-hmm.
A lot of duck hunters, they just sit there and they breast out their ducks.
Yeah.
And then they're making fun of me because I'm sitting there plucking seven gadwall. And they're like, what are you doing? And I create them, and then I take it home and I create everyone this stuffed duck dish with a full, plucked duck with crispy skin all the way around, and they're like, oh, so that's what I wasted.
Yeah.
And so for me, that's that moment is it's got to be waterfowl or turkey. Mm-hmm. Same thing. It's just that the rush of the birds coming in and outsmarting them with your spreads of decoys. It's just, I don't know, there's something about it.
Well, a lot of us will shoot the occasional duck or goose. Some of us do a lot more of it than others, whether you're a versatile dog owner or a Labrador owner or somebody like that. And for the record, everybody, he's got a red Labrador somewhere in that garage with him right now, I think. But
head on my lap.
Oh, I love it. Well, that explains a lot, and we love it, every bit of it. So if you were going to help me and help listeners to the Upland Nation podcast, do one thing better with a duck, what's the kind of thing that, you walk into somebody else's kitchen and they're doing something with duck and you really want to say, hold it, wait a minute. What would that be?
Other than plucking instead of breasting, I would say it's got to be the temperature on how they cook it.
Tell me more.
The more I watch people post pictures of them cooking duck, the more I see that it's overcooked. Duck should be served at medium rare to medium. The most should be medium, but it should be served at a medium rare.
Yeah.
A lot of people will tell me that when they eat duck, it has a very livery, irony taste to it.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that is the more you cook it, the more condensed that flavor profile gets within the meat, and it shrinks down to the center where it's going to be most isolated. When you're allowing... Think about it this way. If you're cooking your favorite cut of steak and you cook it well done, that steak does not have the same flavor profile or the same texture or the same consistency as it would if you were to cook it medium to medium rare. The same thing is going to apply to 90% of the wild game animals that you cook. But for me, seeing that duck breast that's like cooked like a chicken breast, because people are scared of parasites and bacteria and all those other things, it's very sad, because the reason that people don't like duck most of the time is because they've never had it cooked properly.
Yeah.
And I think keeping it at that 135 max range of doneness is key to the perfect duck breast, the perfect smoked duck, the perfect roasted duck, the perfect any duck, is keeping it at that temperature that you're eating something at that medium to medium rare.
And a lot of pros have told me in the past, that means take it off the heat at about rare, because it will remain cooking for a little bit, even if you plate it up.
Yeah, you've got about 10 minutes of continual cook time. So when you pull that, like usually what I do is I get my ducks up to 125. And then I pull them and let them rest and finish making everything else I want to do, making the sauce, making the demi-glaze, whatever I'm going to pair this duck with. And then by that time, whatever I've cooked is now back up to that 130, 135 range. Yeah. And it's, you know, if it is a little too rare for you, get a real hot cast iron skillet and do it skin side down and crisp up that skin even more. And it's going to continue to cook to that temperature that you want without overcooking it. Love I think it. The problem is people are afraid to, they're afraid to get that char on the skin because they think it's burnt, but you got to render down that fat to allow the flavor just to explode.
I love it. Like I said, I'm drooling all over the control room right now. Let's transfer that whole idea to upland birds. What is one of the bigger mistakes we make when we're cooking upland birds? And let's all agree, as I say in the courtroom, let's concede that plucking is better than skinning. All right, so let's get over that and then go from there, Jeremiah.
I think the biggest misconception that all people have is that cooking pheasant, chucker, quail, that the breast, even on dove, that the breast is the best cut of meat on that animal. And I challenge people that the thigh and the leg, to me, is the greatest cut of meat on any upland game bird. Yes, when you've got that wild pheasant, you've got that pen-raised pheasant that you're out there chasing your dogs with, that they have those tendons in their legs that are, you know, really hard to eat around. But the thigh meat to me is just, I don't know. I get made fun of because I'll sit there and I'll have a whole plate full of little quail legs. Like just and I eat them off the drumstick.
Yeah.
As I'm sitting there and everyone's like, what are you doing? I was like, it's the best. It's the best thing is eating those little quail drumsticks.
Well, I came across a bag full of chucker legs and thighs last night. And so I'm thinking, all right, you know, typically here's I'll make pot. Yeah, I'll slow cook them, pick them out, put them in a pot pie or put them in a soup.
Right.
What else can I do with upland game bird legs and thighs that might be a slightly more special?
Oh, man, my favorite way to cook like chucker or quail legs, if they're not on the bird itself, is I like to if you've got a pellet smoker or if you've got an oven, I like to lay them out on a sheet tray, season them well, and cook them to about 120 degrees. Then I take those out and I get a hot cast iron skillet with some garlic, butter, and a little bit of like avocado or olive oil. And then just pan sear those up until they're well done, or not well done, but until they're crispy.
Yeah.
And then just take them out and eat them. And they're just absolutely insane and incredible.
Way better than Hooters wings.
Oh, 100%. Hold on. My daughter's alarm is going off in her room. I apologize.
I could hear it
and I'm like, what is that sound?
Well, okay, so for the record, he's a family man too. So
two daughters, they're at school and I'm like, what is that sound? It's her alarm and it said like go to school, which I don't know why she has this late to go to school.
It's a
plan. She must have put it in wrong.
Yeah. It's a master plan. She's going to train you eventually.
That's right.
You're listening to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden. That's Jeremiah Dowdy. From Field to Plate is where you find him on Instagram, Facebook, and probably skywriting if they still do that sort of thing. They used to do it down at Huntington Beach when I was hanging down there.
Yeah, they still do on holiday weekends.
Yeah, I believe it. So if you were to suggest some in-field care advice, for a guy, I was out chucker hunting on a Sunday, and first bird I killed was first thing in the morning, and I carried that bird the whole day in the back of my vest, and I probably could have done things a little bit better had you been with me on that trip. What should I do after the dog brings that bird back to me?
One thing to, because it's funny, we think about deer hunting, we think about big game hunting, it's like, got to get the guts out as soon as we can to get that body temperature cool. And then we're dove hunting, quail hunting, chucker hunting, and we'd throw the birds in our backpack for 6 hours. And, in the dog vest. And we're not even thinking about it with our body temperature and stuff like that. So one thing that I've found to cool down and to get the blood out of that critter is to take off the head. I know it's not as pretty for pictures. I know it's not ideal for when we want, you know, the birds posed with our dog. But in the terms of a better quality meat, removing that head, because we don't have time to remove the guts, really helps with bringing down that internal temperature of that bird. It allows the blood to flow out. It also allows some moisture to get out of the bird as well, to yield a cooler bird as it's sitting there, instead of it's not sitting its own thing. And so that's what I do. That's what I teach my kids to do. And I know it's one of those deals that isn't the prettiest thing in the world, but when you get out at the end of the day and you can literally see the difference in the meat, just in the color of the meat, the flavor of the meat, just by removing that head instantly as it's sitting in the back of your backpack.
Great.
Either that, or sometimes if it's really hot, because I know when we dove hunt, we're hunting in 106 degree weather here in California and dove opener. And so a lot of times what we'll do is I'll take a cool pack and I'll throw it in where you can, most of these new upland game vests have your water pouch in the back where you can put your water. If you take a frozen pack and put that in the back of your vest, not only does it help cool you down, but it cools down the internal temperature of those birds as well.
Sure.
And that makes it so you don't have to, rip off those heads as fast if you want a really cool picture.
Mm-hmm.
But I found it when you're sitting out there in 110 degree weather, walking through the desert looking for chucker, sweating your butt off, and you've got that ice pack in the back of your back, it really helps not only you, but it helps the birds as well.
I'm liking that idea. There are some states where you got to leave that head on to be legal till you get home and render them to the freezer. But in other states, you can do that with a leg or a wing. So just check your own regulations wherever you all live, Upland Nation listeners. So, all right, let's carry on. So now you get home. You have these birds, headless birds or something else, and you got to put them in the freezer for a while. We have this debate every time I come home from a hunting trip. My wife insists that they go into the vacuum sealer. I'd rather just put them in a Ziploc bag. But are there ways we could do both of those things a little bit better?
I think if you're going to eat them quicker, put them in that plastic bag for sure. That Ziploc. But if it's going to be any time sitting in your freezer, vacuum sealing is always the best.
Yeah.
The reason being is freezer burn, and putting freezer burn on that little bit amount of meat. Sometimes you have a big steak, you get freezer burn, you can kind of cut it off, cut around it. But if you've got a little breast, and think about this, I tell everyone all the time that upland game bird hunting is probably some of the most expensive wild game meat you'll ever eat. Yes, it might cost $800 to go shoot an elk, but you're also getting 300 pounds of meat off that elk. A lot of times upland game burners, we're spending $100 a hunting trip to get, a pound and a half of meat. And so for you to waste that meat by freezer burn or not getting it cool fast enough or not taking the time to properly handle it, I think it's just such a sad thing, because it's per ounce wise, it's the most expensive. I mean, dove hunting, like my dad shot like 3 boxes of shells at his 15 birds this year. Here in California, we've got to shoot lead-free.
That's right.
Shells.
Ow.
So that's like $11 a box. But dad, you shot $33, so you spent $2 a bird. And he's like, well, I said, that doesn't include the gas, the this. Or you're spending $4 or $5 a bird for that. I'm like, take your time and shoot. He's like, I have more fun shooting. So that just, when you think about it in the terms of that, it's a vacuum seal bag, a roll of vacuum seal bags cost you $11 at Walmart. And you can do your whole season's worth of chucker in that roll of bag. So take the time to clean them properly. Make sure they're padded dry, because a lot of times we'll rinse them off.
Yeah.
We'll throw them right into there.
Good point.
Now you're introducing water and ice, which again, it's going to freeze or burn. Even though it's vacuum sealed, you're introducing that ice into that bird.
Yeah.
So a lot of times what I'll do is after they're cleaned and rinsed, I'll actually get a nice big glass bowl or a shallow baking dish, line it with paper towels, put all the birds in there, put it in the fridge for a couple hours,
mm-hmm.
let those birds dry out, let the water and the blood drip into those paper towels, and then I'll take them out and then I'll vacuum seal them. And it yields I pulled out some pheasant from a year and a half ago, and we had it for dinner 2 nights ago, and it was still just like fresh pheasant. So take the time to do it properly. It's gonna really work. And also, if you do pluck that whole bird, sometimes you can spatchcock it, where you take out that back spine.
Yeah.
And you can lay the bird, you can lay the bird flat, and now you've got a vacuum seal over all the surfaces versus that hollow cavity that still has air in it.
Yeah.
And you're plucking those birds.
And it seals better too, by the way. I did that with a couple birds, and boy, oh boy, the best wild turkey I've ever cooked was spatchcocked like that. They cook more evenly, and for some reason, I don't know why, but they just tasted better. Maybe because I thought I was such a smart guy that time around.
Yeah. No, it actually there is a cooking method to that, and there's a science to it. The deal is that for food to cook more evenly, there's going to be more flavor. Because what happens is a lot of times we put that bird with its thighs and legs down, and that's going to burn and overcook as the top is. But as we're laying that bird out evenly, we're getting more surface area for seasoning.
Yeah.
We're getting more surface area for if you're smoking it, if you're grilling it, there's more flavor that's going to be able to go through. As well as now what's happening is that the bones that you cut are actually allowed to release all that marrow, which is going to release flavor into the birds and release moisture into the birds.
Wow. I love
it. So there is a science to cut it out. And I've actually been leaving the only cutting one side of the backbone off.
Sure, yeah.
And leaving that on because there's a lot of meat on that backbone that we throw away. And the best part is once you're done smoking that bird and everyone's picked the bone clean, take all those bones that you had and throw them into a pot and make a wild turkey stock.
Love it.
Make a wild pheasant or chucker. Like every year I make an upland game stock, which is all the – as soon as we're done with birds, I take the bones and freeze them. And then when I have enough, I take all these chucker, pheasant, quail, pigeons. If we're training dogs and we're raising pigeons, and man, I'm not wasting those. Throw all that into a stock pot and make incredible stock to be used for soups all throughout the year.
Oh, boy. We really need to have this discussion after dinner from now on. hey, everybody, stick around. Jeremy Doughty, stick around. I've got a couple announcements I got to make, and then I'll bring you back in. We've got some questions from some of our listeners that I'm going to pose to you. So if you need a little snack, Jeremy, you are dismissed for about 60 seconds to do that. The rest of you hang around because we got lots more to talk about right after this quick break. And it includes Dr. Tim's Performance Dog Food. Learn more about Dr. Tim's Performance Dog Food at drtims.com. Friend of mine, Tim Hunt, is a musher. Yeah, no, that's a sled dog racer, by the way. And he is also a veterinarian. This guy knows how to make dog food. I've been feeding it for years to my wire hairs, and you might want to take a look at it if you want the best, the optimal performance you can get out of a working dog. And here's your incentive. Please pursue this. Go to the website, look at all the varieties, and then consider changing your dog food brand. And here's your incentive. 30% off your first order. Just use the code Upland Nation at checkout. Upland Nation will get you 30% off your first order. Hey, one of the things I really like about it, Dr. Tim's bags are still 40 full pounds. They're not playing games with you. They're not trying to screw you out of that extra pound and a half or 2.5 pounds that some of those other guys are doing. You get full value for your purchase. And ESPAmerica.com. Learn more about how hearing loss is cumulative. You can't get it back. I don't care what kind of stuff you put in your mouth or in your ears. If it ain't ESP America hearing protection devices, it's not going to help. So remember this, in the field, custom fitted ESP hearing devices will keep your hearing intact and your hearing protection devices in your ear. That's the whole idea. Hunting with them in your ear is not so inconvenient near anymore as it used to be when you had to roll up those little foam gizmos or stick something in that was probably too loose and was going to slide and fall out. All right, so here we go. And this is the segment called Handle It, where I share something I've learned the hard way with you so you don't have to when it comes to dogs, dog training, and dog strategies in the field. I was writing a script for a show we're doing out of Kansas a couple days ago and was reminded yet again of a lesson that I have to relearn every season. One of my hunting partners had dropped a bobwhite quail in a big thicket, you know, those sticky berries that nobody wants to go into. That's why we own dogs, of course. We couldn't find it for a while, so we doubled back around, and I sent Flick in once again. But before I sent him in, everybody in the party, and it ended up being three hunters and two camera guys, were all wandering around in there, kicking the bushes and bending down and lifting things up. Then I finally realized that Flick can probably smell way better than we could in there, and we all pulled out and sent Flick in, and sure enough, within a couple minutes, he tracked that bird down into a little hole underneath a little log and brought it right back out to me. You'll see it on an upcoming episode that actually will air this spring, so watch for that. But the lesson is, stay out of the drop zone, let your dog do the work. They got 10,000 times as many hearing and smelling receptors in their nose and their nasal cavity. They're the experts. We're not. All we do is stink the place up if we're poking around in there. Let your dog do the work, and you will probably have way more success. All right, I promised Jeremiah a little break. I hope you got a sip of water or coffee or whatever your drink of choice is this time of day. Jeremiah Dowdy joins us from Field to Plate. Now let's go to the Facebook page where a number of our listeners have wanted to ask you and get a little bit more insight into how to take care of their wild game birds a little bit more. Jeremiah, are you ready?
I am. I was just throwing the tennis ball, so we're good.
Love it. All right, here we go. Bob Wells is a little bit like me. I just got a new big smoker, and I'm looking forward to breaking it in. He says, I like to smoke a whole pheasant that has been skinned, not plucked. So obviously it dries out quickly, even with tinting with foil or basting an injection. Any suggestions from you, Jeremiah Dowdy, on how to take care of that skinned bird in a smoker?
Yeah, watch your temperature on that bird. I said it before, that temperature is kills wild game. And so you can't have meat dry out if it's if it's at proper temperature. Pheasant can be cooked to 160 degrees and be eaten at that temperature. A lot of times people think of pheasant as chicken, where they got to cook it to 175 degrees to kill off any, you know, bacteria or anything that's going to be like that. Well, salmonella is only found in fecal matter from a lot of times commercializing bird cleaning and stuff like that. So if you actually think about it and you're properly cleaning your birds and washing your birds and rinsing your birds, there's a 99.9% chance that you will not get salmonella off that bird.
Can we clean a bird with anything besides cold running water?
Not that I recommend.
Okay. There's not a magic spray or something like that. Okay.
I wish there was. There's a lot of guys out there that once they clean their birds, they make a nice salt bath, and they'll dip their birds in salt bath for a minute and a half and then bring it out because they think that salt with that. But as long as you're washing your hands and you're rinsing off that bird and you're taking care when you're gutting that bird, your chances of getting sick are so minimal. I mean, I've eaten birds that were way undercooked and I'm fine just because of the fact that something happened and we had to eat. But yeah, I think your biggest thing is watching temperatures on that bird. It's gonna dry out because a lot of times you're waiting for that breast to hit that 170 or 180 degrees. Because again, they're seeing it hit 175 on their temperature gauge, and they're pulling that bird out, and it's gonna continue to cook that 10 degrees I talked about.
Yeah,
it's 185 degrees. So when you pull that bird at 155 and let it sit and rest, you're getting up to 165, and you'll be blown away at this bird. Also watch the temp of your smoker.
Yeah.
You want to keep that smoker at about 220 to 225 degrees and cook that bird a little bit longer at a little bit lower temp. A lot of times that smoker sometimes will reach 375, but that's like cooking in an oven. And so people are thinking that they're smoking this bird and they want to take 2 to 3 hours, 4 hours to smoke this bird. But if you were to put a bird in a 375 degree oven, you're going to overcook it in your oven as well.
Yeah, so that becomes jerky.
Yeah, 100%. And then, which is great. Pheasant jerky is phenomenal if that's what you're going for. But I would say watch internal temp of your bird and watch the temp of your smoker.
Yeah.
And you're gonna yield an incredible, just delicious bite of food. And I get asked all the time, like, hey, well, how long do I smoke something or how long do I grill something? And I tell everyone the same thing. As soon as the temperature hits blank.
Yeah.
I don't cook on times. I know a lot of people that are in the barbecue world, no one cooks on times. We all cook on temps. So watch those temps and you're gonna be a better smoker all around.
And just for the slow learners like me, we're talking about the temperature of the actual meat, not the temperature of the smoker on the dial on the outside of the smoker. We're measuring the temperature of the meat itself.
Correct. But also watch that.
Sure.
Watch that internal temperature of your smoker, because a lot of times you'll have a temperature gauge on your smoker that reads 225 degrees, but if you put a probe in that smoker where your bird is close to that grate, you're upwards of 300 degrees because that's where the fire's coming in. And so know where your hot spots are, know where your cold spots are. Just take some time and figure it out.
Great. All right. Paul Hageman asks a question that I think we sort of answered, but let's do it again and come up with another one. What are some recipes for pheasant legs or chucker legs or even quail legs? I love your idea, and I have some people coming over next week. I'm going to try that one. What else do you do with game bird legs?
I love to make tamales with game bird legs. Taking all those legs, throw them in a slow cooker, a Dutch oven, a crock pot, whatever you got. Throw in some fresh onions and garlic and peppers and chilies, and making just a delicious, letting all that cook together, shredding that meat, pulling that meat, taking some fresh masa, and then making tamales with it. Over Christmas, I made just around 20 pounds of wild turkey leg tamales. And passed them out to went to church on Christmas Eve, and I was like Santa Claus to everyone at church, passing out just bags of wild turkey leg tamales.
Some of my fondest memories are the Mexican families in our neighborhood bringing our tamales over on Christmas Eve.
There's nothing better. And so it doesn't take that much time. It doesn't take that much effort. I mean, you go to a Walmart grocery store and pick up a bag of masa and follow the directions on the back and make the filling with your wild up and game birds, and make tamales that are going to just blow your friends and family away. And it's something different. It's something you can freeze. I mean, once those are done, vacuum seal those, freeze those, pull them out, throw them in, you know, reheat them. And you've got a meal for a while. And the best part is they're cooked. So I've done it where I've taken the tamales out in the field with me and let them, you know, thaw as we're hunting. And then I pull it out and I eat a cold tamale because everything's cooked, everything's ready to go. And there's just, I don't know, there's something about eating what you hunt when you're hunting them is pretty cool. So
I do that with sandwiches a lot of times. You got a great sandwich recipe for me?
For birds?
Any game bird.
I've got wild turkey. I remember I was like 3 years ago, I was in Tennessee. I went to a Subway, and they had their teriyaki sweet onion, you know, turkey sandwich, chicken breast sandwich, whatever. And I came home and recreated that with turkey breasts. And the recipe is actually on from fieldofplate.com. Just type in turkey. You've got a bunch of turkey recipes. You can type in pheasant, quail. Got recipes all over there.
Great.
And that was, to me, that was one of the best sandwiches because I slow cooked this turkey breast, sliced it thin with homemade teriyaki sauce, and just, I don't know, it was absolutely phenomenal.
Jeremiah Dowdy is our guest today from Field to Plate. You can find him at all of those places, no matter what kind of social media you're using. I'm Scott Linden, your host here at the Upland Nation Podcast. We're in the Cabela's Podcast studio. Thank you, everybody out there. Well, now they're in Springfield, but it's a long story. Where do you come down, Jeremiah, on game birds and fruit?
Game birds and fruit, like mixing them together?
Yeah, topping them. I'm a big believer in all sorts of fruit toppings on my game birds. It just seems to open things up in it, you know, from a culinary standpoint. Do you ever mess with that stuff?
Yeah, I've done many, like, chutneys on top, which fancy word for chopping up. But yeah, I've done like a huckleberry barbecue sauce on top of birds. We We grilled a bunch of quail when we were in Texas, and we took a bunch of fresh blueberries and raspberries and made like a compote and put that on top of those. Like that, I think what it is because sometimes wild game birds have more of that. They tend to have more of that pungent, bitter taste sometimes because of what they're eating. You know, chukar are eating those manzanita berries. And so sometimes they have that kind of sour taste to them. So when you pair that with something sweet, it goes into that culinary mind of that sweet, salty, and savory. And so if you take that sweet, that salty, that sour, mix those together, it's always going to be the best thing you can do. And so I think the only thing I avoid with upland game birds is citrus. Unless I'm marinating them in citrus, there is a recipe where I take like a Hefeweizen beer with oranges and star anise and cinnamon and cloves, and I brine those birds in those before I grill them, and that pairs really, really well. But I think putting a raw citrus on top, to me, it's not. It almost I don't know. Just for me, it's not. But any of those sweet berries are phenomenal. But if I brine a bird in orange juice and cook it, or cook it over like orange wood or lemon wood or something like that, I think it's really good. But pairing it with that, unless you're doing a pizza, throw some pineapple on there with some smoked upland game bird, it's good. But for me, I'm not really big on the citrus with the birds unless it's a brine.
And we're not going to engage in the debate over whether pineapple belongs on a pizza or not. That's for another day in another place, believe me.
Hey, everything goes on top of a pizza.
I love
From
it.
you name it, I don't care. A pizza is a pizza,
Yeah,
and I'll eat it.
it's just a medium. I agree.
That's right.
You mentioned twice now a cast iron skillet. If we were to invest in one or two more tools in our kitchen to specifically honor the game birds we harvest, is a skillet right up there? And if so, what else should we get to go along with that?
Cast iron skillet is, my wife says I have a problem with cast
There's
iron skillet.
no 12-step program for this one, is there?
No, but there's 12 different sizes of cast iron, so I guess there is a 12-step program. No, I mean I go to thrift stores or yard sales and I see a rusted out cast iron, and usually people give them to me for free, and I love bringing them home, and after a day of elbow grease, bringing it back to its glory. Because people see rust and they're like, but as long as you treat it, and I don't know, but yeah, cast irons are to me one of the best ways for upland game birds to cook them. Especially you can throw that cast iron in an oven
Oh,
and
yeah.
continue to cook, and you don't have to worry about any contaminants and that kind of stuff. But I would say one thing that a lot of people don't think about when they think about upland game birds is a meat grinder. I grind a lot of my upland game birds. I make So one of the big things that a lot of people like to do with dove is dove poppers, right? Every dove season,
Oh, yeah.
your feeds are filled with dove poppers, dove poppers, dove poppers. Me, my only problem with that again is that by the time the bacon's cooked, your dove's overcooked.
Yeah.
And then you're not really tasting the dove, you're tasting jalapeno, cream cheese, and bacon. And so what I like to do is I like to take the dove and I pick every piece of meat off the bird I can, from legs, thighs, breasts. And I run them through a meat grinder, and then I make dove meatballs out of them. And then we put these meatballs on subs with jalapenos, and I make a cream cheese gravy. And we kind of have a dove popper meatball sub in our house. And it's absolutely incredible. Taking pheasant and grinding them up and making lettuce wraps like you would chicken,
Yeah.
utilizing your game birds other than just a breast or a thigh, is actually to run them through that grinder. And it's going to open up 10,000 more recipes for your wild game bird that you didn't even think you could do. Everyone thinks I'm crazy when I take, four pheasant and throw them in a grinder until they have, Southwest egg rolls with wild pheasant meat ground up in it. And they're like, oh, okay, I'm gonna go buy a meat grinder.
Oh,
So
yeah.
I would say a cast iron, a meat grinder, and a sharp knife are like the three essential tools in the kitchen.
Yeah, absolutely right. I have all three, and I'm going to do that with some chukar for tomorrow night. Thank you for the inspiration. One more listener who has a question for you. Andy Upwards addresses one that actually we probably all ought to discuss to a degree, and that is, how long should you hang your pheasants in a cool place prior to cleaning them for cooking or storage. So there's really two issues there. One is, do you hang birds at all? Number two, do you hang them whole or do you hang them after you've gutted them out? So Jeremiah Doty of From Field to Plate, enlighten us.
This is a huge debate between a lot of people. Some people are very adamant on getting the guts out of your bird as fast as physically possible. Then you look at some of these cooks who are trained in over in France and stuff like that, where they hang these birds for 7 to 14 days with the guts in it, because they're allowing the enzymes of that meat or of those guts to start penetrating the meat and act for a tenderizer, in a sense, to those birds. My whole thought is, if it's a domesticated bird and we have the means to control that, then put it in there for 7 to 14 days. But a lot of times we're shooting birds and we're shooting into the gut cavity. Mm-hmm. And we're shooting into cavities where now it's not the guts intact using their enzymes. We now have fecal matter that is inside that bird cavity. And so if you're gonna dry age your birds, or you're gonna hang your birds, or you're gonna put them in your cooler or freezer or whatever you're gonna do to allow them to age, just make sure that they're not gut shot. Make sure it is a head shot or wing shot. Just do some physical looking, see if there's any marks on the chest, see if there's any marks on the back where those pellets could have entered that cavity. And if they're not, then I'd say you can leave them in there 4 to 7 days before you need to remove the guts. It also depends on if you're going to be eating the internal organs. Like for me, I love saving the livers, I love saving the hearts, and I love saving the gizzards. So getting that stuff out before it has time to start to decompose and send those enzymes depends on how many birds I'm going to do. Now for ducks, I usually take half my ducks and I'll throw my ducks in the ice chest or in the refrigerator at home that haven't been gut shot, and I'll let those age before I pluck them. But if the birds that I know I'm going to utilize in different ways, I'll get those guts out of them as fast as I can and start the process.
If you were going to leave us with one more bit of advice about the care and feasting of game birds, what would you tell us?
Don't be afraid to try something new. I think that is the biggest thing, especially in the upland game world. I grew up in that upland game world, and trying something new is always the hardest thing, because we were taught how to hunt by our forefathers and our grandpas and our dads and whoever else before us, and we read all these things. So we say the right command to our dog, we shoot the same stance because that's how we were taught to shoot, we wait a certain distance for that chucker to fly before we take the shot so we don't ruin the meat. But when we get to the kitchen, we're so afraid to try something new, we're so afraid to go outside the box because we don't want to ruin that bird. My biggest thing is, just don't be afraid to try something new. Don't be afraid to go on and grind a whole mess full of dove and try some different recipes, because I'm telling you, it's going to open up your culinary world and it's going to get more people on board this idea of upland game hunting. Because in all honesty, every person that says they want to learn how to hunt, I tell them to get into upland game birds first. To me, it's the gateway drug to hunting. It's easy, it's fun, it's constantly moving, there's constant motion, you're not sitting in one spot, you're listening, you're seeing, you're watching the dogs work, you're watching birds flush, you're watching birds fly over. And so the next step in that is introducing people by, if you can introduce them with a delicious plate of food, they're going to want to go walk alongside you, grab a shotgun, and have fun hunting with you.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better. Jeremy Doughty, From Field to Plate, fellow hunter, culinary expert, chef extraordinaire. Go to the website and get some of those recipes. Try them all out. It's been incredible talking with a fellow Southern Californian who's gone to the dark side and is a hunter now as well. Learned something. I hope everybody else did as well here on the Upland Nation podcast. Jeremy, I'm going to turn you loose to get ready for that next big adventure in the, I think you're doing some smoking today. So
yeah, I got to smoke about 70 pounds of pork.
So. Wow. I'm glad I'm not down there to help you. but incredible to talk with you. We'll do this again sometime. I've enjoyed every minute of it. I hope you didn't mind putting up with me for the 40 minutes or so we've talked. Thanks so much for being on the program.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on.
And the rest of you, don't go anywhere, because I've got the This Land Is Your Land feature coming up. It's just a matter of time, and that time includes this message from Dogtra.com, where you will learn all about their assortment of electronic training collars and accessories, including the Dogtra T&B Dual collar. Two collars you can control with one handheld that has two sets of buttons, so you don't have to toggle back and forth. All sorts of other great advantages to it. You've got every capability on there, from beep to vibrate to the really loud beep to the stimulation that we need when Flick doesn't seem to listen to anything else. And do me a favor, check it all out at Dogtra.com, and if you choose to purchase one or anything else from there, use this code for 10% off. SLUN10 will get you a 10% discount on your purchase, and if it's over $200, free shipping. Now, where else are you going to find a deal like that except at Dogtra.com? Yes, however you feel about politics these days, Woody Guthrie said it best a while back, this land is your land, and here we are taking advantage of it once again. You know, I was lucky enough this year to hunt all new places. It was incredible. Most of them public access of one sort or another, and I'm going to share a couple things with you that I learned over the course of a season full of wild birds and wild places that you might apply next year, and it's not too early to start planning for that. My first bit of advice, I know it's a tough one, dirty job and all that, but eat and drink with the locals. I understand we all want to bring groceries, we all want to bring our own whiskey and all that sort of thing, but once in a while it pays off to hang out at the bar or the coffee shop or the cafe with the folks who live there for all sorts of local intelligence. Keep it subtle, but there are friendly people of all sorts in the little tiny towns and the wide spots in the road, and they will be glad to help if you just keep an open mind. You'll get advice and tips on everything from what land has been burnt to what's covered in snow to where the water is and to where the birds have been seen. It's all in your public access areas. Join them. They'll probably join up with you as well. All right, so I hope you enjoyed that, and I will see you on some public ground real soon. Okay, now we've got one more break here, and it comes to this. Findbirdhuntingspots.com. You want to win a new pointer over and under shotgun. That's where you do it. Just sign up for my mailing list, and then you will find some of those places that I just referenced in the last feature. Lots of suggestions on places to go and how to hunt when you get there, and maybe some inspiration and motivation as well. Findbirdhuntingspots.com. And a reminder that you can get the best of hearing protection devices, digital and otherwise, at espamerica.com. Custom fitted, waterproof, digital, all sorts. Shop the entire array at espamerica.com. And with that, I will turn you loose to enjoy your own recipes with your own friends and family. Take those birds from field to feast, thanks to Jeremiah Dowdy from Field to Plate for helping us out, inspiring us on that. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to correspond with me in any way, go to the Upland Nation Facebook page or the Wing Shooting USA Facebook page. Please subscribe, rate, or review this podcast. Would appreciate that, not only because it helps me make a better podcast for you, but because that's what gets other people involved. They will learn more if we are rated highly, and that's up to you. I can't do much about it except respond to your suggestions. If you'd like to make some more lengthy suggestions, you can always email me at scottlindenoutdoors@gmail.com. I promise to get back to you. I return every email. I respond to every Facebook comment. And I will honor your time and intelligence every week on the Upland Nation podcast by cutting out all the garbage and giving you the good stuff without a bunch of stuff that you really don't need. Thank you for honoring me with your attention. I know the season's just about over for everybody everywhere, but see you in the field soon.